Welcome back, everybody. It's Ruby and Pete.
Hello, everybody.
We are here today with Nate Lemke. He is the author of a novel called Manic Pixie E-Girl.
Hey,
the Amazon review says it's the most canceled book on TikTok, or the summary, I mean. So we wanted to talk to Nate about what it takes to get to be the most canceled book on TikTok. And I don't know. Pete and I both read it. We really liked it. What did you think, Pete?
I really identified with the main character.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest aspect for me was like, he just feels like he like micromanages his emotions and like kind of is always trying to find balance when he, you know, the thing he needs most is probably to be out of balance.
Yeah, you know? He's kind of an extreme person, or like he has a lot of extreme emotions and a lot of like shame. But I feel like that's everybody, you know, I don't know. So Nate, welcome to the pod. We'll get into it more, but I don't know. Yeah. Tell me about yourself. I think it's a huge deal to write a book. So like, what made you decide to do that and how did that work?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. Very excited to be here.
I thought it's
in the same boat. I thought writing a book was like a huge deal, almost like in like an insurmountable task. I viewed it as for most of my life. Like I've wanted to do it for a really long time. And I've started like countless books, just like writing down ideas in notebooks and like getting further, maybe a few chapters, but like would never see it through. But it's been my dream for a long time. Like I've always been a big reader.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah, and like kind of grew up with the J.K. Rowling like success story, like rags to riches. Like I kind of grew up with Harry Potter, and I was like, that could be me, because I kind of grew up poor. And yeah, so it's always been in the back of my mind to write a book, but kind of like the universe aligned and like maybe like I was more ready for it and did some healing, got some trauma out of the way. But as I was telling Pete, the most important things were, one was I read this book called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which got me back in touch with like my childhood creativity and also like connecting creativity to like a higher spiritual power. So that like one of the core ideas of that is that it's more about like like channeling something or like letting something flow out of you than forcing something down, which is like how I had viewed writing up until that point. It was like a homework assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing was I like took a year off of work, and I didn't really have the finances for it going in, but I like kind of like found a way to make it work in the end. And like having the not having the trauma of work in my life, like was what allowed me to write my book. Like I needed to have like the spaciousness and the, and like to be like very well resourced in order to write it. I wasn't like gonna, I had this dream of being this like, I don't know, like hardcore big dick writer who's like just like forcing it out in the middle of the night after working a double shift, like but that wasn't like how it
kind
worked
of Charles Bukowski post office or something like that, like
exactly.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, you had the freedom to be creative, and I think that's something Pete and I are both like looking for in life.
Kind
of why we started this podcast in a way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just like, you have, how much time do you really have to create for yourself if you have a full-time job, you know, a family, or, you know, there's so much time in a day.
Yeah. And
for me, even for me personally, I feel like I'm so regimented with my day that it doesn't really leave any room to kind of just like breathe and like kind of express yourself in any way, you know? I feel like lately the only chance I get to express myself is doing like art with my daughter, you know, just to like have, because it's like you can't just like be in this like 100-mile-an-hour way of being and then just be like, okay, now I'm gonna relax and just let this channel open up and I'm gonna just write a book, you know.
Right. I'm gonna flow with it. Yeah, you can't switch gears like that, or I find I can't either. I have to, like, it takes me a while to come back to center after, honestly, just like doing anything, work, family stuff, like social stuff, whatever. It takes me a while to wind back down. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that recovery period is like, is so important. Yeah, you can't just like go to like, oh, I'm in the relaxed flow state now. It's like, I remember when, like when quarantine was first happening and like, I was laid off of work, I was on unemployment, and it was the first time in my adult life that I had gone like weeks without having to work. Probably like I had never gone for more than a week without working before. And the first 3 weeks were just like me like rotting in bed, like watching Tiger King, watching freaking Too Hot to Handle. Like,
we were all there.
And I was kind of beating myself up, but then kind of like a miraculous thing happened where like after about 3 weeks of that, I just kind of felt naturally inclined to do more productive things with my time. It was like, I needed those three freaking weeks of like doing absolutely nothing in order to recover from, I don't know, working for 10 years.
Yeah. And usually you get like maybe a day or, you know, a weekend, 2 days. And by the time you've like run your errands and done your laundry,
you're back right back into it. Yeah.
Well, like you said, you kind of did some healing to kind of find yourself at the place where you could take your time and kind of work towards finishing the book. Like, what do you think was the biggest thing you needed to heal? I mean, from me, for like me speaking personally, like, I know like the self-worth thing, you know, like I feel like obviously our parents are probably our biggest issue, but it's like you get programmed, especially in our society, like the capitalist society, of like you always have to kind of be grinding or like working towards something. But what do you think made you like take that leap to have like, you know, to be fearless, to be like, you know what, I'm gonna do this and I'm gonna take my time and I'm gonna do it right?
Well, you know, I didn't even like, I didn't take the year off to write the book. I like took the year off to like, I told myself I was gonna do nothing. Like, I was listening to a lot of.
I would love to do nothing for a year. That'd be great. I mean, I kind of.
Oh my. Yeah, it's like I was listening. Truth be told, I was listening to a lot of Abraham Hicks at the time, and she's got a lot of stuff about like not associating your self-worth with your productivity. But I also had like in the years previous been working on my self-worth as well, just like thinking about what I was worth and like how much space I allowed myself to take up in the world. I mean, the whole healing journey, that thing, it's, I partially poured it into the book. Like,
it seems that way. Yeah.
Like I started I kind of like got my first whiff of like the self growth world. Maybe in like 2019, I was kind of a funny story, but I was out of this, like, I just got on out of this, like, kind of very dysfunctional relationship. And then I was living out of my car and I developed this, like, I developed a relationship, but a purely online one with, like, this woman living in Spain. And eventually she kind of like stopped talking to me. She chose another guy online over me because he was better at sexting than I was. And I was like devastated at the time. I was like, teach me how to like be dominant or whatever. And like, she wouldn't do it. And so I was like desperate online. Like, I signed up for this guy's, like, this, like, sex coach, relationship coach guy, like, signed up for his course. And I totally felt like it was going to be a scam. But honestly, I got a ton out of it.
And can I ask you whose course you signed up for?
It's this guy named Jordan Gray.
Huh. I don't know who that is. We've talked about, like, those kinds of people before and how, like, yeah, there are helpful things in there, I think. But also, like, a lot of what you see on YouTube as far as, like, pickup coaches and sex coach, life coach crossover types, like, is, I don't know, it's just kind of nonsense. But then occasionally there's just, you know, real information about, like, connecting with people and being yourself and feeling good about that. I don't know. It's both things to me.
You're absolutely right. There's, like, now especially, I think even more so than back then, it's like that whole space is just littered with people trying to make money. And but I do think I lucked out in getting one that was actually very, I don't know, like healing focused and,
cool.
So yeah, like, one of the core lessons I took away from that guy was, like, he was like, how you show up in the best bedroom is like how you show up in your life. Like, they sort of, like, bleed into each other. So, like, I don't know, work on your life and you'll end up better in the bedroom. And,
that's really good advice. I mean, I think it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And then from there, it was just like, I don't know, I, like, started going to therapy, was exploring other sort of, like, healing stuff. But anyways, so let's fast forward. We'll fast forward to this point. And I was living in Colorado. I was about to go back to school to finish my degree. And I, like, decided I needed to go out into the desert in the middle of winter and, like, fast for a few days. And I'd never done this before, but I did it. And I kind of came back with the realization that I wanted to be a writer. Like, this is what I wanted to do with my life. Like, school is not, I was doing it for the wrong reasons. So I didn't go back to school. I came back with this kind of galvanized notion that I wanted to write, only to immediately find myself, like, plunged into the opposite. Like, I immediately, like, just went into this hardcore, like, party lifestyle. And I was always kind of feeling guilty because that writing thing was in the back of my mind. But I feel like this is kind of how the healing journey goes, at least for me. Like, I'll make this, like, really strong resolution, and then my shadow will, like, reject it. It will be like, it will like fear for its life, and it will, like, take over with something in the exact opposite. And, like, I'll, like, fall down to the depths of the opposite of what I want to do, and, like, almost, like, need to get that out of my system. And then I can kind of, like, swing back up even higher to that thing that I originally said I wanted to do.
Do you think it's, like, also a test in a way? Because it's like, you sure, it's almost like your subconscious or your unconscious is saying, like, you sure you want this?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think it's like, I think, like, anytime you make a big commitment like that, a test comes along right away to test it.
That sounds true. That feels true in my life for sure. Well, so how did you get out of that? Like, how did I mean, I feel like that's one of the themes in your book, obviously, like the shadow side, and you, how to reckon with it. And you have to go there. Like, you have to, dive in, like, head first into the shadow world for a little bit in order to, you know, complete your hero's journey. So how did that look for you? Like, what did that look like in your real life?
Okay. So, I mean, I guess my kind of, like, so the book is a kind of, like, about addiction, and in one respect, and I've kind of, like, been addicted to various things throughout my life. And, it's kind of like the core message of the book maybe is that, And I don't know if this applies to everybody, but like, it's the only thing that really has worked for me is to get to a place where I'm like, where the thing that I'm judging as like an addiction and like judging is bad and like shaming it, like the only way I've found for those things to lose their power over me is to like just fully like appreciate them and like love them without judgment. And then it kind of like takes the power away. Mm-hmm. Like anytime I shame something, it just goes down to the basement to do push-ups basically. And like, and it's going to come back stronger the next time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, I mean, you definitely see that in, is it Alden? Alden's character. Sorry, I don't know why the name is like
escaping. Yeah, no, that's, me, his, but... that's his name.
Yeah. Okay, good. But you see him go through this, like, you know, he starts going to therapy, and I think it, like, his therapist gives him this advice to just like go for it. Like he's like, he's shaming himself about like needing or craving like sexual validation from women, and he's sworn that he's not going to have sex for like 6 months, I think. But I guess I just think it's cool that like you hardly ever hear that or think of that. Like, what if you just went all in? Like, what if you just like took it to the extreme?
Right, and or, like these, you know, are kind of like,
caring, you know, in a way, like just stop caring about it.
Yeah, and I don't know, these are like maybe like a little bit dangerous teachings on some level, depending on like, you know, how fucked up of an individual you're talking to. Like like I was in my life, I was actually, there's like a drunk driving scene in the book, and like that is taken from my life. Like I was like drunk driving a lot, and like that is not something that like that I want to encourage like people to go out and do. Like, it's obviously very dangerous, not just for yourself, but for other people mainly. So I don't know how I feel about this on like the grand scheme of things, but like, so, okay. So this guy, Jordan Gray, like, I remember I was in this relationship and I was dealing with jealousy. Like, for whatever reason, I had sort of like energetically like positioned myself as like kind of like the inferior. I was like worshiping this girl I was with, and now looking back on it, like, you know, like you look back on these things, like they weren't even that great. Like, that I don't know what, if I had like met her at a different time in my life, like, you know, the energetics of it, the polarity would have been different. But at the time I was like, she's so out of my league, like I'm so lucky to be with her. And so I had this real jealousy problem in this relationship. And to kind of like, I don't know, just like detail what the practice was like, it was like I tried everything, and to get rid of the jealousy, I had to like basically like kind of go into like a little meditation, center myself, feel where the jealousy was in my body, breathe it to life, like literally like breathe that feeling more into life, like try to get myself more jealous, essentially, to the utmost degree. And then like thank the feeling for being there. As hard as that was, it was like, this is like not like a good feeling per se, and has negative impacts on my life. But to, like, to bring it to a point where it's like, wow, jealousy, like you have showed me like this whole new range of human emotions. Like, I am honestly grateful to have experienced you. And then kind of like to breathe and let it go. Like that for me, that's like a microcosm of like the practice for like, of like basically what I tried to do with like other bigger things in my life that I struggle with.
Yeah. I feel like that's something, I mean, I've done meditations with Pete, or like just different kinds of like healings and things. And you always try to identify like where the, or Pete always tries to identify the, like where the feeling or the block or the, you know, energy, attachment, whatever you want to call it, is in your body, and like move it through, like really feel into it. I don't know if Pete can speak to that. And
no,
that
experience. Yeah. I mean, I think like I think personally in my experience, like doing energetic work, I mean, my and working with like clients too is like, I think everything stems from like our parents. And I think, you know, in saying that, it's also like the archetype of the parent, which I think like when we're kids, pretty much our parents are God.
Yes.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's your actual physical parent. It could be like what you view through your programming as like your father in terms of like God, you know,
but yeah, like the archetypal father.
Yeah.
Like I always trace it back. The way I interpret energy is like your right side is your dad or your masculine energy. Your left side is your mom or your feminine energy. And I always, a lot of times, I would say 95% of the time, I always trace people's energy back to their shoulders because I always interpret that as like should or like your programming. So it's like what that parent, you know, believes you should be, you know, and I'll do layers and layers of work with people and it always goes back to that. I don't know if it's the way I work and that's how it just traces back, but I always feel like it always goes back. Because it's like, it might not necessarily be your father, it might be his father. And that's how it's passing through. I don't know if you ever did constellation work.
Have you ever heard of I don't know, I have not.
So constellation work is like working with the soul of your family. Like this practice believes that your family has a soul and you kind of carry, like your father carries your father's father's burdens and stuff like that. And I always trace it back to, you know, any energetic issue is typically tied back to like your parents or the archetype of the parent.
Well, it's funny that you say that because like I think a lot of my healing journey has been kind of getting rid of the shoulds that have just piled up on me that like, you know, I wasn't really living an authentic life. It was just a list of these shoulds was like what my life had become. And at the same time, I have always had a lot of shoulder issues. Like, that's the primary part of my body where that is like that has needed a lot of work.
Yeah, I feel like tension in the shoulders and neck is. I mean, I think that's very common, and I do think there's something spiritual or energetic about it. It's not just. Why do we all tend to like hold tension right there? like sort of like a chakra or something.
Well, it's also like everything is metaphoric too. It's like you hold the weight of your, you know, like think of the phrases, like you're carrying the burden on your shoulders, you know, it's like,
yeah,
I think everything in energy is always like metaphoric. So like these sayings didn't come from nowhere. It's, I feel like, you know, our ancestors had that knowledge without having to try, you know?
No, I totally agree. You know, like feeling something in your guts. Exactly. Like it's in those like sayings that have been passed down. And also like, I like with kind of like my shoulder problems, I end up being kind of hunched and I've been working on trying to fix that and kind of bring, like, as I bring my shoulders back, my heart also kind of opens more to the world as a byproduct of, like, kind of fixing your shoulders. And it's, like, and it's weird, like, as you sort of remove those weights, those metaphorical, like, energetic weights, your metaphorical heart does become more open to the world.
Yeah.
For sure.
I remember even from my own experiences, like when I first started I do mediumship, and like when I first started opening up, I went to like see an energy healer, and like the first time I went, I was kind of like nervous, and she did all this energy work on me and I just like threw up and I was,
oh my god,
and I was just like what the, and I felt like this whole weight kind of lifted out of my chest, and I was just like,
that's powerful, man. Yeah, that's powerful.
And I was just like, what the hell was that? I was in like a, like it was like at a massage place, and I'm just like throwing up into the garbage after she does like this energetic work, and I'm like, what the hell did she just do to me, you know? Because it was like, you know, this was like almost 20 years ago, It was like, it was like when energy first, you know, that type of thing was kind of first coming out in the public. And I'll never forget that, because it was just like, obviously it did something to me for me to just like throw up like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were holding on to some stuff.
A lot of demons in the basement.
No, I don't think I've ever heard you tell that specific story. That's a good one. Okay, well, just to switch back to, so you eventually write this book, and you self-published it, or what happens after that? Like, what did you do to market it? I want to kind of get into that stuff now.
Absolutely. Well, I guess for all these listeners out there who haven't read it, so it is about healing, but it's about a lot of stuff. It's about like tarot cards, it's about manifesting, it's about sexual shame, it's about conspiracy theories, and it's also like very fast paced. It's like I kind of wrote it for maybe like the TikTok generation and like maybe people who are kind of like bored with the mainstream fiction that comes out these days. Like, yes.
Like, I love to read, but I have a hard time finding things that, you know, keep my attention or aren't basic, for lack of a better word. And this was very refreshing in that way, for sure. But
yeah, most things coming out there are like just so safe that it's kind of like boring. And it's a book about this guy's healing journey. And I wanted to write kind of two different books at the same time. I wanted to write one, something kind of like Catcher in the Rye, where there's not some grand story arc. It's just kind of like follows this person's life and inner monologue for a few days or a month or whatever. So I wanted to write something like that, but at the same time, I also wanted to write like a hero's journey, sort of like Matrix-y, kind of like overthrow the system at the end sort of kind of book. And I feel like I kind of did a good job of combining them. So it's like got a little bit of both of those aspects. And yeah, when it came around to, I did a lot of research on Reddit about the traditional publishing versus self-publishing. And for a couple of reasons, I chose the self-publishing. One was that like their traditional publishing can take up to like 3 years before like your book is on the shelves.
Wow, I don't think I knew that. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time.
You're probably done with that part of your life, like,
Right. And there's a lot of like, I think, concepts that are kind of like apropos or like relevant to the zeitgeist now that are definitely not going to be in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the content is very, there's a lot of like graphic content like that I don't think publishers these days would like touch with like a, I don't know, 9-foot like pole or whatever they say.
You know, sex magic, sex cults, like those things maybe are a little too, I don't know, taboo or something.
Exactly. And also being written by a man. I didn't realize this at the time, but like later on with my experience on TikTok, I realized how much more problematic it is for like kind of men to be sexual than it is for women.
Hmm.
Because I don't know. I was talking to my partner about it, and I was like, yeah, think about like 50 Shades of Grey. Like that book wasn't even that good, but it like, you know, it's iconic because it's overtly sexual, like pushes boundaries. Or I was like, think about like Call Her Daddy. Like, you know, it's the biggest podcast biggest or second biggest podcast in the world. This girl's like talking about sex, and she was like, Nate, what do those things have in common? They're both done by women. And I was like, oh my God.
yeah, sure.
But anyways, and then I do like to have kind of creative control over like my product. So I chose the self-publishing, and Amazon, as much as I like despised them before, their like interface and like process for self-publishing a book is so straightforward, very user-friendly, and like I did have an internal like struggle with this. Like I'm kind of like overtly like anti-capitalist on my meme page, and you know, the common sentiment is just like, hate Amazon. It's a company, it's a billionaire's company that's destroying the planet.
We all hate Amazon. We all also use Amazon. So that's the kind of, that's the world we live in. I don't know. Like, I agree with right. you, but, and I see your struggle, but it's also, I don't know. It's,
I mean, like, my struggle is mainly that, like, I like to question myself when I have these beliefs and, like, can I be grateful for this thing that I used to, like, anytime I'm, like hating something too much, it's usually, like, a sign of something that I'm just, like, repressing in myself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I, like, challenge myself to be grateful for Amazon, but...
Anyways, I mean, it is. It's useful. It serves a purpose. Like, I don't think 50 years ago, like, it was so easy to self-publish a book and have anyone really have access to it. It, you know, it's accessible to everybody. And that is something that, I don't know, like, that's a good thing. Like, everybody can access Amazon. Everybody can order something on the internet and have it sent to their home. Like, that's, there's nothing, like, inherently bad about that. But as a company, as, like, a, you know, however many billions of dollars industry, it's gross. But I don't know. It's just part of the world that we live in. And there's a lot of those kinds of contradictions, I think, that we all just have, like, we just have to kind of make peace with. They're not, you know, holding two opposing ideas at the same time, kind of, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And I don't know, the book kind of delves into that a little bit with, like, I don't know, feminine, masculine energies and, like, kind of, like, I've always played with this idea of, like, Mother Earth and Mother Earth kind of being this, like, anthropomorphized woman, and then capitalism being this sort of, like, I don't know, like, asshole dom dude who comes along and, like, you know, Mother Earth, she had this very sympathetic relationship with the hunter-gatherers for, you know, like, 200,000 years, and I think, like, I don't know, we give ourselves too much credit. Like, I think, like, I don't know if I actually believe this, but I just like playing around with the idea that, like, maybe there's some consent on, like, Mother Earth's level for, like, getting roughed up a little bit in the bedroom.
Okay.
For
okay,
lack of a better
idea.
Word.
Like, I like that.
You know,
good.
Like,
she's,
yeah, like, you know,
she's bored.
She's bored. Exactly.
She wants a little excitement.
Right, right. She could. I think she's much stronger than we give her credit for. She could take us out whenever we want. She wanted to, and I don't know. I've got a lot of views on, like, nature and humans, and like we are nature. Like, life came, evolved out of this, like, uninhabitable planet against all odds. Like, nearly polluted itself to extinction right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Because, like, the first organisms, they breathed out carbon dioxide. Breathed out oxygen, breathed in carbon dioxide, and they, like, nearly polluted themselves to death with all this toxic oxygen until something came along and evolved to, like, breathe it in. And, like, life and DNA is kind of this magical thing that, like, humans right now are, like, being, like, you know, we have to preserve this snapshot of nature that existed, like, right before humans entered the scene, and that was, like, the perfect nature, and now anything we do to it is, like, terrible and fucked up. I think we give ourselves too much credit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think of it in terms of, like, manifestation or attraction, it's like there's always the contrast. There's always, you know, if you're talking Abraham Hicks, it's like you got to know what you don't want to know what you want. So maybe, like, even on a soul level for Mother Earth, like, this is a contrast, you know, in terms of like when nature kind of ran the world. Well, nature always runs the world, but, you know, this is the contrast. This is pollution, you know, lack of gratitude. Being here
to appreciate nature hurts it at the same time. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, like, I'm like, think of us on a soul level. Like, you're on a soul journey and you want certain things, or you think you want certain things, and you need the contrast of your experience to say, like, oh, I have the shitty boyfriend, so when I have the good boyfriend, I'm grateful, or like,
yeah,
you know, whatever in terms of that, or like your job or what you think you want. It's like, if you look at the broad picture of Mother Earth's existence, like, there's very contrasting experiences between technology, no technology, pollution, you know, people worshiping Mother Earth, people worshiping a different god, you know. It's like a contrasting experience.
It's about finding balance at the, like,
well, it's, I think it's expansion of consciousness, mm-hmm. like expansion of experience. That's what it's about. Like, if we're here, I mean, my belief is we're here just for experience, and like, it's a contrasting experience. If you visualize like Mother Earth as being like a human person, you know, this is their it's a contrasting experience along her journey.
I see it the exact same way. It's like we had those thousands of years of living in harmony with Mother Nature, if you will, as the hunter gatherers, and like, I don't know, I do want to go back to that, but at the same time, it's like almost against a law of the universe that, like, you know, things are going to expand and things are going to change, and like, it's all part of, yes, this experience that the universal consciousness is undergoing.
Yeah, I mean, it's also pretty egotistical to think that we can just destroy something that's been around for, you know,
exactly. So no one talks about how narcissistic that is. To think that, like, we're here and we're just destroying everything in the whole universe somehow. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, my desire to eat a steak is destroying, like, the whole environment, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, it's important, yeah, to play with these sort of, like, polarities in the kind of, like, alchemical sense, I guess. Like, I don't know. The more you zoom out. Anyways, let's get back to the book. Yeah. Let's get back to the book. So yeah, I self-published it, and luckily I had like a little bit of following on social media. Otherwise, I don't know who, like, outside my family and friends would have bought it. It's tough out there for the self-published authors. Like basically nobody's just going to stumble upon it. Like, you have to market yourself.
Yeah. Definitely. And I mean, that's how I found out about your book. I think I saw it on some like meme page. I think the Montauk Effect, maybe. Just to shout out them. But I think I, whoever they are. I think I saw it there, and that's eventually how I ended up following you. And yeah, you did a giveaway and sent me like a signed copy of the book. That's how I got it. Like, not to say I wouldn't have bought it, because I was like, I just thought the title was funny, but
I was like, that's, I caught a lot of flack for the title, but yeah, I thought it was funny too.
But yeah, like, you definitely have to be able to, you have to have somewhere to start. Like, you have to have somebody who like wants to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. You know, the title, it was kind of like, so the manic pixie dream girl trope is kind of like a bad derogatory trope, according to, you know, like the mainstream, that was around in movies like, I don't know, like Yes Man and 500 Days of Summer and stuff. And, but I called it more that because now there's sort of this like resurgence or like reappropriation of that term in kind of like meme online culture. Like, I can't tell you how many like accounts are like, unironically called, or maybe ironically called, like manic pixie meme girl, pixie whatever. It's like, it's in the kind of the zeitgeist right now. right, we reclaimed it. So that's more what it was a nod to. It's just like this, like Abby, the girl character in the book, if she was a I don't know, if she was in real life, that is what would be in her bio.
For sure. Yeah, no, that's, at least on like a, you know, superficial level, she is that character. But yeah, the name was good. And you had like, I guess you have just, had you been just doing this meme page for a while? Like, how did you have a following? Did you just start making memes? Like, what, how did that go?
Yeah, like literally like right as I was starting the book, I also had this urge to make the meme page, and they were linked in my mind for like since from the very beginning. I would like make little like teaser memes like that had like plot line points from the book and like just throw them in as the last slide kind of mysteriously.
That's awesome.
they're way back in the lore, like in the very early memes. Yeah, so they're always linked, and I was super grateful that I pursued both, because that is like where the majority of like my readers came from. And luckily, like, because like my memes are very much like about these things that I think about, like the people who follow my page like really got the book. To the point where like all the initial reviews were super positive, and like part of me was like, I just want somebody to leave me a bad review, like, because I know it's not perfect. I know there's things wrong with it. Like, I want somebody to really lay into me. And you got to be careful what you wish for in this world.
Yeah, you do. Okay.
Because boy, did I get those one star reviews.
You did. But I feel like haters are fans. That's like what I tell myself. Exactly. Like I would, you're right though. Like, don't wish for that, because don't wish for haters. It's probably not exactly what you want. So
yeah, the
how did that go?
Sorry, what? The cancellation, being canceled?
Or yeah, like what shifted, what happened from like there being like mostly positive reviews by people who follow you and like get your voice as like a writer. How did it shift to people like trying to cancel you? What happened?
Okay, what happened was so at this point, it had been like 14 months since I had worked, and I was like now living off of credit cards, really racking them up. I was like, you know, praying to the universe every day for my book to pop off. Like, I felt like I could not go back to working in a restaurant, which is what my job is. And I was getting desperate in like the final months. Like, I had sold, you know, like a good amount of books to my following on Instagram, but I only had like 3,000 followers, and like definitely a very small percentage of them were buying the book. So I was like getting desperate, and I knew you could like kind of, it's easier to go viral on TikTok than it is on Instagram. Mm-hmm. So I tried a few different TikTok accounts, and the first few kind of flopped, and I don't know, TikTok's this thing where you can't just like keep trying on the same page. Like, you almost have to start over if like your page doesn't catch right at the beginning these days. There's a whole little art to it. But
yeah, wow. I don't think I knew that. I kind of can't with TikTok, but
yeah, like the very first few hours on TikTok are super important. Like,
oh wow.
So like, if I wanted to just like my old regular TikTok account, like if I started posting like book things on there, they're not going to do well, because like if I like cooking videos and cat videos and conspiracy theory videos, like those are the type of people it's going to show the videos I make too. So I had to make a new account and like basically only like book talk videos, so that when I eventually made a video, it would be shown to people on book talk.
I see.
And I fought it for a long time, because book talk is the lamest part of TikTok. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, so many normies, and it's like super boring and very pastel. But I adapted, I chameleoned in, I made my little bookshelf cute aesthetic background, and I started doing book review videos, because those were very popular. And So I did this promotion where I was reading a book a day until my book got on the New York Times bestsellers list. That's just what I said at the beginning of the video because I
Yes,
thought it
and
was catchy.
that's a total like that's very TikTok like as a way of like catching people's attention, you know, to do
Right,
something
like
every day until like to promote my song or whatever. Like, yeah,
exactly, just like that.
there's a lot of those and very clever. Yeah, so it's interesting the backlash that happened.
Well, the problem was, and so even doing that, I was only getting like 200 views a video, so I had to like throw something in there. Like, I had to, I re so on TikTok, like, or on basically any platform, comments matter a lot more than likes as far as the algorithm is concerned. So I'd made some videos in the past where like I made a video about this writer who, like, I don't know, like his family left, his wife and child wife took their child, left him because he was focusing too much on his writing, and like the comments popped off, like with half the people being like, oh, what a shitty father, like this guy, what a terrible person. The other half were like, he's one of the greatest writers of all time, like that she should have stuck by his side. So like I realized this kind of like gender thing, like, I don't know, sparked discussion in the comments.
Yes.
So what I did was I said I'm reading a book a day till my book gets on the New York Times bestsellers list, but I'm only going to be reading books by women authors. And that essentially that line right there is what got me canceled. Because for a lot of reasons. And it may seem sound silly to you, Pete, like well, at the one time, for one thing, like I did want to read more books by women authors because I was looking over my past reading list and like it was primarily men that I was reading, and I was like, I should branch out a little bit, and this is a good way. Or like I was also in a reading slump, so like forcing myself to read a book a day, like it's going to be like a good way to get me back into reading, read more women authors. Like I was doing it with like benign intentions. I also wanted to get
So you weren't trying to
engagement.
be a troll. Like you weren't, I mean, a little bit maybe, but not in that
No,
way.
I did not think, I had no idea the response I was going to get from that. Like,
Because that's
I
always
wasn't
the
doing it to troll.
accusation,
Like,
right? If ever someone is like doing something very controversial, there's always a lot of people who are like, oh, they're just doing this for like clicks and likes and comments. Like they're just trying to like make people mad and be a troll, essentially. And I didn't I don't I mean I don't see that as being like something you were going for, but I just wanted to
I mean,
clarify for everybody. Like
I did want the engagement.
you
I
wanted
did
the
want the
engagement,
engagement,
but you
but
didn't necessarily, you weren't trying to like really offend people.
no, I didn't realize it was offensive at the time. Like, it's not like I was shitting all over these like women authors. It was like I was enjoying what I was reading and giving like good reviews for the books. I just said it because I thought, people would talk in the comments. But yeah, so what happened was, they started saying that I was like exploiting women authors to sell my own work. And
Oh
TikTok or BookTok in particular is like very, they're like cancel happy, like trigger happy. They like want to cancel anybody who like steps out of bounds for any reason. And so it's also very like woman dominated space, probably like 90 plus percent women on BookTok, like both creators and users. So I'm this like straight guy going in there and like, I don't know, maybe not knowing the community that well, and doing this like silly promotion. And all of a sudden, like I wake up to like thousands of these hate comments, and like there's and my name, there's a hashtag for my name, hashtag Nate Lemke, has over like 2 million views of like none of them good. It's like all people
None of them good.
none of them good. It's like all videos of just like them saying that I'm like this misogynistic pig, basically. And then people started reading the book, which was it wasn't the right people reading it. Like
People who are already mad
most
at
people,
you mean they shouldn't be the ones reading it, but yeah.
yeah. People who are already mad at me started reading it, and they like, basically just took the parts about. So the main character, he's addicted to like kind of like feminine energy, like, which we could go on a whole thing about. Like, I think like young men in our society don't have, like, or women have, like, a coming of age ceremony where kind of like their energetic tie to their mother is severed. So, like, I think we crave feminine, some sort of feminine energy for the rest of our life on some level. Anyway, the main character is like this. He kind of has like a porn addiction and stuff. And like, so they take all of those parts and kind of just like, you know, plaster them all over TikTok and be like, this guy's writing this misogynistic book and like exploiting women authors to sell it. And I just start getting so many one-star reviews.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just feel like that's a very extreme take. Like,
it was, but partially the algorithm is to blame because there were a few like genuine people doing it in the beginning, but their videos would get so many likes. Like, the algorithm was pushing videos about me. So like creators who maybe didn't even care that much were just jumping on for the residual engagement. Like this one girl, she like gained 1,000 followers in a day because she did a video about me. And then like other people were seeing that and doing it. Who knows? Maybe partially they were mad at me and partially they wanted more followers. So like, I don't know. In the social media world, it's like you never really know. Like, I am a content creator myself. I make memes. And you guys are content creators with this podcast. So it's like, does what we're saying matter if it's not being heard by people? And like, you obviously are creating this thing and putting it out there because you want it to be heard. So it's like, to what level am I going to tweak things and like do things for the algorithm to have it seen? And at what point does it like, then like, at what point does it erase the original message? I don't know.
Yeah, but at what point does it backfire? Or
yeah, but it doesn't feel authentic. I mean, I don't know. It feels gross to me. You know, like, you know, you see, like, I used to have TikTok and I had a pretty good following. I do mediumship messages and like I would put like a video and people would comment for a message, and then I would do like a message based off the comment. And you know, when I first started, I was only on for like a couple months and I had like 10,000 followers. And then I got,
oh no way, that's really good.
And then I got sick of TikTok, so I deleted it. And then I started a new account and I've had it for like a year and I only have 2,000 followers. And
oh yeah, it's,
yeah, that's exactly how it goes. Like,
but it's like you get these people who are like, you know, you feel like, I tried to make a video, I couldn't even take myself serious, where like people are like, this video is going to change your life. And it's like, you know, it's like you want people to watch the video for a certain amount of time. So like they, you know, you go online, there's different like gimmicks to make people just engage for that amount of time. Like there's a difference between like 7 seconds and 10 seconds. And you're just like, I don't know, it just doesn't feel real to just, you know, kind of pitch yourself. I mean, I know it's a business and you have to make a living. So on the one hand, it's like you want to be like that. But to me, it just feels like when you're being authentic, that's when you get it either way. You know?
Yeah, I feel like that's something we like struggle with on the podcast, is like, you know, yeah, just trying to like promote it in the ways that social media kind of like requires you to promote it. And both of us are pretty like, yeah, just like hesitant to do anything too like clickbaity or anything like that. But also you kind of have to, like, you have to reckon with the like social media TikTok world. And yeah, I don't really use TikTok anymore. I did try like to do that sort of like was what Pete was doing. I was reading tarot cards. And I just couldn't, I just couldn't like stomach being one of like very like thousands of people, just trying to like emotionally manipulate people into watching them. Like, I just couldn't,
right,
do that.
And the algorithm is different now. Like back in 2020, when we were in quarantine, like anybody could put anything on TikTok and if it was interesting, it would do well. But now, you have to like do the weird, you have to like make it super engaging. And if you want your video, if you don't want to be stuck in the 200 view jail.
Mm-hmm. And that's what happened with YouTube too. I think like I used to be like a huge like YouTube like watcher back in like high school. And I feel like it became this whole thing where you have to like there's like, you know, 10 or 15 people making videos that get watched, and and it's all just like clickbaity craziness anyway.
Right. And I think about this all the time making memes, because like I know which memes are gonna like hit well with the community and then with my followers, and then I also like have ones that are like more deeper, more personal, that I know aren't going to do as well, but it's more authentic. And sometimes those surprise me, and they do well. It's always this battle between authenticity and engagement. And I don't ever really have the answer for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's okay. You don't have to. But I do think do you think that through the cancellation, you also had people connect with your work? Like, do you think that, I don't know, do you think it's sort of maybe in a roundabout way will work out in the end?
I'm very grateful for it at this point. Like, it's like, I think about like if Charles Bukowski or like Hunter S. Thompson was alive writing today, they would definitely be canceled. Oh, 100%. And absolutely. So it's like kind of like, I don't know, like a stamp of approval of like kind of like a deranged writer. So
that's, those are, it big, was very, those are big props, honestly. Yeah.
At the not time, to it compare was super you to traumatic. Either of
those people, but in a way, yeah, like it's not easy to put yourself out there in that way and have people like judging you that way. And I mean,
it's kind of like an energetic law of the universe that the haters don't really understand. They're still giving it energy, mm-hmm. like the either way, if they're hating it or loving it. But during the time, like during the week where it was the worst, like it was one of the most traumatic events of my life. Like I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. Like you feel like this terrible person because like the only feedback you're getting is like. Like people were saying such mean things about terrible stuff. And as a chronic people pleaser, having like basically managed to go most of my life with having everybody that I engage with like me, it was quite a shock to wake up one day and have thousands of people hate me. But it was, I don't know, at some level it feels like my shadow was manifesting that, like it's like shame on like this huge public scale, like
sort of like I've had like very sort of like Alden in the book.
Exactly like Alden in the book. Yeah, it was like I almost like wrote it into like being.
Yeah, you kind of manifested it. I mean, do you think that there's something healing about being confronted with like all of your like, yeah, being confronted with all of that like shame or all of that criticism?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like shame has like now become like a very spiritual thing for me. It's like one of my deepest sort of like things I struggle with. And it was, even while it was happening, I would take a step back sometimes and be like, holy crap, this is like a very deep experience I'm going through right now, like in almost like a BDSM sort of
yeah.
way. But on like a spiritual level.
Like a self-flagellation.
Self-flagellation, yes. Like, oh, I'm so terrible. But I don't know. I'm super grateful for the whole experience now.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I would probably, yeah. I feel like I would want to like lay in bed and never get out again. And, you know, like go into a cave and never return. But I think I have like, yeah, I think I just don't want to be like the center of attention like that. Like getting that much attention is something that's like scary to me. But then it seems like once you got all of that, even though it was negative, it was also like freeing in a way. And I feel like the, you know, if you know, you know, like the people who get it, with your book at least.
Well, also, like, if you have a shitty experience, you're like, it can't get much worse than this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It kind of, like, scares you into strength, in a sense, you know? Like, you know that, like, well, that was a bad experience, but I guess it can't be much worse than that.
Absolutely, yeah. Did you write it as a satire? Like, was that your intention? Because I kind of read it that way, and I feel like if other people had read it that way, or at least in a little bit of had a little bit of good faith like going into it, it wouldn't have been interpreted so negatively. But I think people took it very literally.
It's like, it's like maybe like a secret third thing. It's like, okay. Yeah, it was like kind of like inspired by like stuff like Chuck Palahniuk and Tom Robbins.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's satirical on some levels, but a lot of it is like very informed from my own life, and which I caught a lot of flack for like it being like a self insert is what they call it. And but I was looking back at my favorite books, and my favorite books are all self inserts, like Desert Solitaire by this guy Edward Abbey, freaking Moby Dick, Steppenwolf by Hermann Hesse. It's like all the really true stuff from the soul is like you know, going to be a self-insert on some level. Like, you're writing, like, that's the kind of stuff I want to read, is, like, people's souls.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's a whole genre now, like, auto-fiction. I mean, that's a little more...
Is it really? I had never
heard of that. You know who Tao Lin is? He's an author, but he kind of invented it.
He did, like, The Trip, or, like, is there a book called Trip? Or he's, like, got, like, acid, kind of, or, like, hallucinogen books?
Yeah, maybe. I couldn't tell you, like, all of... Whatever. I've read, like, one of his books, but he does, like... His whole thing is autofiction, where he, like, puts himself in the book, and it is fictional, but it's not, like, a memoir or something. But it's a fictionalized version of his life. Like, kind of, I don't know. There is like a
I gotta read this.
I think your book is more like fantastical, great. Maybe than like most like auto fiction would be. But
I'm looking at his books right now. These look great.
Yeah. No, I think he's very like neurotic, and you get a very good sense of his like inner dialogue, at least from what I've read. I really like it, but it's, like I said, it's a little neurotic. And if you're a neurotic person, it can kind of like trigger those those thoughts, you know, but but it's very real. It feels very authentic. It feels like you're connecting to someone's like true voice, which honestly, like I did feel reading your book. It was fun, and it was fast paced. It was funny. And I'm not somebody who even likes anything that's like fantasy or sci-fi, or like I don't really connect with that kind of stuff usually. Like, I don't know. I feel like book talk or whatever is very like romance-centered, like fantasy-centered, like women like falling in love with interdimensional beings or like werewolves or whatever. You know, like I can't with that stuff. Like I like very real kind of feeling things, but your book did have, like the main character, and even Abby feels very like real to me. Like we all like at least if you're somebody who's maybe a little bit too online, you really know what all these things are. Like Pete and I feel like. You covered everything: tarot, timeline jumping, 9/11, shadow work.
The Large Hadron Collider.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I felt really connected to the main character, and Abby seems like every girl on TikTok now. And it's like, I don't know. I thought it was very realistic. So I don't know if that says I'm fucked up or something, but. You know, like, I feel like it's just a guy working through his demons, and I think, like, kind of everybody is now, and I feel like everything's more present with, like, the amount of things we're exposed to through social media, TikTok, and, you know, it really spoke to me for sure.
Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate you guys both reading it, taking a chance on a book. Like, I know it's hard for me to... Somebody wants me to read something, like, to weasel it into my list.
Yeah. I mean, how much do you feel like you connect to, like, are you a conspiracy theorist? Are you a starseed? Are you, you know, like, do you feel like you're connected to that stuff?
I mean, it's like, In 2014, when I was on YouTube, I like definitely identified as a conspiracy theorist. So I was going down so many rabbit holes and nothing to the point of like flat earth kind of things, but more just kind of things like, you know, the US government is not as good as they taught you in history class.
Yeah.
And then I sort of like examined that belief of like conspiracy theories and like saw it really kind of like connected to my father and like, cause he wasn't really present in my childhood. So like I had this kind of like distrust of like an authority father figure that I later projected onto the state. And that's not to say that like the US government isn't doing corrupt, fucked up things. They totally are, but it's like my hyperfixation on conspiracy theories had a lot more to do with me than it did with the US government.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's like there's just something about us that we want to be able to like point the finger and like identify one thing that's wrong, and it's really like probably deeper than that and within all of us, and yeah, connected to our like father and our like family dynamic and all of those types of things. But being able to say like, oh, it's the government that's, you know, destroying the world, it's a little more like you can externalize it and swallow that a little bit easier than maybe working through all your own shit. Not just that, yes. Like you said, there is there's a lot of problems in our like government and our politics and our society, etc. But how can you really address that or do anything about that? You can't. What you can do is like look at yourself and go like within.
For me, it's kind of like a constant practice of like identifying my triggers. Like I'm a big believer that like my triggers are my teacher. Like they sort of show me like where I need to grow. And for me, a trigger is like anytime I find myself like hyper fixating on like a person or thing and having like a lot of emotional energy around it, whether it be positive or negative. Like that girl I was telling you that I was dating, I was like, you know, like really worshiping her or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I realized later on that like I was sort of projecting my repressed, like I didn't have my own self-worth at the time, so I was like putting all this self-worth on her instead. And that's like an example of like a positive trigger. But like anytime I'm like judging somebody really hard, like I try to turn it around and it always turns out to be like, oh, that's a part of me that
I didn't really like looking at, kind of thing.
Yeah,
well, exactly. I think that's interesting because I mean I definitely relate to like I feel like when I've put people up on a pedestal in that way and like sort of loved and worshipped them, it's really about me like getting the validation from them and yes. And getting yes. like I can't find my own self-worth in that time, right, or in that situation, but if they give it to me, then I have permission to like love myself or whatever. And that's like the trap of it, because as you know, you're reliant on somebody outside of you who you can't control for your own like self-worth and self-love. It doesn't work long term. It's not sustainable. But in the moment, if you're not aware, you can definitely get caught up in that trap. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. And I think a lot of people do just show up in your life sort of as your shadow to make you aware of that. And if you don't take heed of that, like wisdom, if you don't like take a look in the mirror after experiencing something that, then you're like missing the point. You're going to keep having that like same struggle over and over again until you kind of learn the, like what it's trying to show you about you, instead of being like, what's wrong with this person, or like, why don't they love me anymore? You know, like, it's, you can't, those are not the right questions. Like, why do I need them to love me so bad? It's a better question to ask yourself.
Right, right. I think you just summed up like a huge part of the spiritual path. It's like, I think a lot of people just do continue to go back into the same things and always think it's something wrong with the other person. But like, to take that step of being like, what do I need to learn from this, is like a huge leap and like kind of like expansion of consciousness, and kind of like, I don't know, stepping out of that maybe more NPC programmed role into like, now I'm going to like have a bigger awareness of what's going on inside of myself.
Absolutely. I think that's so beautiful though. And I feel
No, you're good.
Okay. Well, Pete, I feel like you were gonna say something before I like before that.
No, I don't. I was just listening to you guys speak. I mean, I was just thinking, like, I don't. It's funny how you always like are so in your emotions, and me? To me, it's, yeah, like you just, it feels like, it always feels so vulnerable to be like, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm a
people. You need validation from other people, yeah.
Yeah, like, that feels so vulnerable to me. Like, I don't know.
Just something I've learned about myself. Like, I know that.
Yeah. But I guess, I mean, if you're on TikTok, you're probably seeking validation from other people anyway.
Everybody is. Like, it's not just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Everybody is.
We all are.
Maybe you work through it a little bit, but, and maybe maybe you work through it and can help guide other people through it. But either way, you're still kind of, we're all connected is the other thing. It's like all of our shame or whatever is connected. It stems from the same place. Like maybe it looks a little different. But yeah, like all the people triggered by the guy, Manic Pixie E-Girl, like they could have, you know, they could stand to look at like, why is that such a big trigger for them? Like, why did they get so mad? I mean, I get it if you're just trying to get views and interaction on your videos and you're just trying to, like, create a drama where one didn't exist. Like, that's whatever, neither here nor there. But if you were genuinely bothered by it, I feel like there's definitely room to, like, look within and figure out what it is about it that...
Well, the issue is too. The issue too in TikTok is like you're probably not reaching the most evolved group of people. I mean, I'm not judging them, but I'm just saying, like, I'm calling a spade a spade. The
denominator is kind of like what the algorithm is.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, they're just like, I feel like they're kind of reaching for something, and they're not, you know, like it gets to a point where you're just kind of like not really necessarily like breaking things down. You're just kind of taking it in and just like reacting to it, you know. It's like I think of like Clockwork Orange, you know, like people just like with their eyelids taped open and they're just like consuming like the most messed up things. And you're just like, you know, like recently, I'm sure you guys, if you're on TikTok, have seen the whole thing with the aliens in Miami.
I'm not on TikTok. It was so traumatizing. I had to stop for a while. But what is happening?
So there's this like viral video in like Miami, Florida, where like 400 cops showed up to this like mall. And supposedly, like, people there said there was aliens at the mall. Like, and, like, it's just, like, I don't know. Like, I watched this, and I'm just, like, I mean, I don't know. I guess there could be a chance that there were aliens at the mall, but it's just, like, people absorb this stuff, and all of a sudden, it just goes viral, because it's just, like, catchy. And it's, like, people aren't thinking about, you know, supposedly the truth of what happened was like somebody said there was like an active shooter in the mall and they arrested like 4 kids who were shooting like fireworks or something. But supposedly they called it in as an active shooter. And then people were saying there are aliens there, and it's like all over social media. And it's like people are talking to me about it. And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I feel like if there was aliens, like, we would know about it. Like, it would get out. I don't know, though.
It's bizarre.
But it's just...
Well, I know what my memes are going to be about tomorrow.
Yeah, look it up. I've definitely seen, like, posts about the Miami Mall and aliens, but I don't think I've... I didn't, like, dig into it any further. But, yeah, that's... It's just odd. I guess aliens are always something that will, like, catch people's attention. But I like, the picture that I saw online was, like, literally, like, 400 cop cars surrounding this mall in, like, Miami. And I don't know, like, why did literally every cop car need to show up? It feels like AI or something. It seems like, how are there even that many cop cars in Miami, like, with people in them, like...
Well, let me ask you, Nate, like, what, how do you, kind of, you know, make your way through, like, obviously, like, the conspiracy shit always pulls people in, but, like, how do you make your way through, like, kind of knowing what to believe or what not to believe, you know, like, I feel like it's so, we're so, like, you know, consumed by, like, these, like, psyops. You don't even, like, a psyop is a psyop, like, you don't even know what's going on. It's like, how do you kind of work your way through this?
You know, that is a big question, and harder now than it used to be. Like, can you still hear me?
Yeah, you're good.
Like, when I read, so I first read some Noam Chomsky back in, like, 2014. And he really opened my eyes to, like, how to read propaganda or, like, see it in newspapers and whatnot. Where before, like, yeah. I would basically, like, look at the New York Times and kind of, like, essentially believe everything that they were saying on there. And, like, you know, I kind of believed up to that point that propaganda was very blatant. Like, they show in the history books, like, I don't know, like, racist depictions of, like, Japanese people during World War II. Like, they're like, this is what propaganda is. But after reading his book, it, like, really opened my eyes to things like, you know, like, if a militant group in a country is aligned with the US's goals, we'll call them rebels, or newspapers will, like, label them rebels. Or if it's, like, a very similar group, but they're just, like, antithetical to the US's goals, we'll label them terrorists. It's like, just with the choice of words is sort of how they structure the reality. And but with bigger things, like, I don't know, like aliens, stuff like that, I guess I'm at a point now in my life where I just kind of view it all almost like with a sense of humor. And I've been so, like, kind of chronically online as of late that I see it through the lens of, like, content, and, like, it doesn't really matter if it's real or not. And and kind of like, if aliens are real, if the world is hollow, like, it doesn't change the fact that, like, I still have to go to work tomorrow and serve tables. Like, like, it doesn't really matter if they're real. Like, it doesn't change, like, my main struggle in life, which is, like, having to, like, exist in late stage capitalism.
Yeah.
I think you're exactly right. Like,
yeah, I mean, it really
doesn't change much. I mean, I think it's interesting. I feel like I oscillate between wanting to know and wanting to understand, like, what the purpose of this is or that is, like, especially with propaganda. Like, okay, if this is lies, like, what's the purpose of it? And then, you know, going to the other extreme, which is, like, I don't want to know anything and I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, you know, it doesn't matter. But
yeah,
it's also very curious to me, like, why we're presented with, like, the information we're presented with, and why certain things, like, go viral and other things, you know, anything that goes viral, chances are the next day you won't ever hear it. Like, you won't ever hear it again, like, after that. But
at the same time. It's like, why? Why now? I don't know. I go back and forth.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, part of me gets like a little self-righteous and like, who cares, you know? Like, we have so much more shit to worry about than like these, you know, aliens or anything. You know?
Okay. Well, just to wrap it up, what are you doing now, Nate? Like, what are you planning? Like, will you ever write another book? Like, what's your...
Right now, I am in the depths of a post-book depression. Like, it's the swing of the pendulum. As like Thich Nhat Hanh, or however you say his name, says, he says, first comes the ecstasy and then comes the laundry. And right now I'm doing the laundry, because like writing the book was an ecstatic experience. And now I'm like having to pay off my credit card bills. And it was like a spiritual sort of like outpouring, and now I'm kind of like left drained, and it also kind of coincides with the winter months when we're kind of like kind of energetically hibernating anyways.
Yeah,
so I think it's going to be a while before I write another one like that. I poured a lot into that one, and I kind of like need to process the whole experience. And
yeah, I feel like it's a lot. Not just the, like, definitely the writing and publishing of the book, but also all of the, you know, just weird feedback. And I don't know. I'm sure if I were in your position, I would be like, I need to just, like, you know, sit with myself for a little bit.
Exactly. But I am very active on my meme page, so for those of you listening, it's Dark Nate of the Soul, so people can follow me there, and but definitely at some point in the future I won't say definitely, who knows if there'll be another book, maybe it was just a one-off, but we'll let the universe decide.
Absolutely. Well, whatever you do, I'm definitely a fan of memes and all of the stuff that you're doing right now. Thank you for being here. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being on.
Through your process, creatively, and yeah, it's hard to be out here on the internet. So,
you guys were awesome. Thank you so much. And it was a pleasure being on.
All right. Take care.
All right.
Thanks, guys.